WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're going to be getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road, presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery and Goodwill Industries, and soon to be Window Nation. But we're going to take a little respite before we do that. We're going to be back at Conrad's next week, and then into May, getting all around the city. Don's excited about that, but we've waited a long time to have this guy on. It's been over a year. It's been 2.5 years since we sat at State Fair having chicken and waffles, and as I remember the holidays, I think eggnog might have been involved. Don, I'm going to let you do the honors. You have endorsed this candidate for governor. We've had his running mate on, and he missed out on the Fadley's crab cakes a couple weeks ago, but we may work to fix that before it's all
over. He's traveling all over the state trying to connect with folks. We did have his lieutenant governor, Aruna Miller, with us at Fadley's, and she had a great morning down there walking through the market. But we welcome back to Baltimore Positive gubernatorial candidate on the Democratic side of the ticket, Wes Moore. Wes, welcome back.
It is good being back. It is good seeing you both, even virtually. I'm looking forward to seeing you in person. But it is always good being on Baltimore Positive. Thanks for having me again. Yeah.
So are you tired yet? Let's start with the serious stuff. I mean, I follow you.
I'm never worried about that. I think energy is not the issue here.
It's unreal.
I'm telling you, I'm not tired at all. I am so energized. I'm so energized by getting all around the state. I'm energized by the conversation and the response that we are getting all around the state, both myself and Aruna. And I just think that there's something happening right now in the state of Maryland. There's something really special and really unique happening. And I feel like our campaign is filling into a void that was already there. I think people are anxious. I think they're tired of divisiveness. I think they're tired of back and forth. I think they're tired of politics as usual. And I am so excited about not just what these next, 8 months are going to bring, but what I think the next 8 years are going to bring.
I just want to get first things first, because I had to Google this. When's the election? Let's let people in on this, because I think the targets moved. It moved 2 years ago, from April into June with the plague. You're getting a little more time, which could be good, bad, or indifferent. But I looked at it and looked at it. It seems like a strange time to have an election.
It is. We were going back and forth because it ended up in the courts because of all the redistricting stuff. But election day is going to be July 19. That is going to be the primary date, July 19. It is locked in and it is done. The general was never a question. The general was always going to be in November. But July 19 is going to be the primary date. And so you're right. I mean,
well, you don't get a general unless you win on the 19th. So, moving that target, that's where it is, right?
Well, listen, there was a while where we were just hoping that we would have the primary before the general, because we had no idea when the primary was actually going to be. But the thing about it is, but I think you're right, and you bring up a good point, where, we got into this campaign knowing that that July 19 is going to be an incredibly important date. But our sights are set on November. That's the date that matters, because this is about making sure that this is not just about winning a primary, but making sure that we can actually push Maryland forward. And the only way you do that is with a focus on winning in November.
Nestor, you raised it before we jump back to Wes, and there are a number of topics we want to explore. But good point. July 19th, primary. Early voting, July 7th through the 14th. So folks who are listening, begin to mark your calendars, July 7th through July 14th. And a really important date is the last date to request a mail-in ballot is July the 12th. Because we know that in July, a lot of people are going to be in and out on vacation. So if you plan to vote by mail, the last date to request that is July the 12th. So these are dates, Nestor, really good point. We ought to be promoting these regularly.
Well, I don't think we brought it up. I think it's the first time we have said July 19th on our airwaves, like literally. And I literally put it in my calendar the other day when I was prepping to speak with you, as well as speak to other political candidates. For you, Wes, doing this, you sat with us 2.5 years ago, and people can go back and they can hear the other Wes Moore and get your life story and do all that. The decision to leave Robin Hood and do this, and where this I might run for governor, was this something in your mind's eye 2.5 years ago when we were sitting together? Like, at what point does the light go on for you to decide to do this? Because I don't think you spend your whole life thinking this is exactly what you're going to do.
That's exactly right. No, when we were sitting in State Fair 2.5 years ago, you know, this was not something that was on the radar, and neither was the idea that we would have a global pandemic that was going to shut down, you know, the entire globe. You know, I think about the things that I really wanted to do and why I decided to get into this race is you realize we have a generational opportunity to get this right, to be able to deal with issues that, frankly, oftentimes are generational issues. I mean, think about it. So many of the issues that I'm hearing around the state, the one thing that I know about them is none of them are new, right? When you're talking to people about public safety and people feeling unsafe in their own communities, in their own homes, in their own skin, that's not a new phenomenon. COVID didn't bring that up. When we're talking with educators and who are saying, we feel overworked and we feel, you know, under-respected, COVID didn't bring that up. You know, we had educators who were being underpaid long before COVID. When we look at lack of transportation assets, it's not like COVID said, oh my goodness, we don't have ways of getting from where we live to where we work. It exacerbated it. But what it also did was exposed it. And so when I think about the work that I've been doing for my entire life, and I've been a public servant for my entire life, I just haven't been a politician. But as a public servant working on issues of economic mobility and economic fairness, on working of issues like fighting poverty and creating getting platforms for children to be able to move from one place to another place, creating ways for people to think creatively about partnerships between the private sector, nonprofit sector, you know, the community organizations, that I thought that in this moment, as the state is thinking about who is going to be the next chief executive to lead us into this next moment, to be able to have a cross-sectoral conversation about how do we come up with long needed changes to the way we do our government's business. That's why I thought it would just be a unique moment to lead and to lead in a way that, frankly, that I've led for my entire adult life.
Where did it come for you to see that government was a problem in what you were doing with Robin? Now, we can all look here and say government has issues, we need things we can fix. But as it relates to government and the way it treats people, in yeah. the case of Robin Hood, and you were seeing all of this, where did those deficiencies lie that you could come to Annapolis and make something better, especially in our city?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I saw when I first became the CEO of Robin Hood, Robin is one of the largest poverty fighting organizations in this country. Just in my time as CEO, we allocated north of $650 million. And that went towards housing, transportation, education, early childhood, mental health, criminal justice reform.
Did you get help from government, or did you feel like government was pushing against what you were doing in trying to do that kind of work?
Yes. I mean, so what's really interesting is that, you know, we've never received nor accepted a single dollar of government resources. This is all private philanthropy that we just targeted towards these challenges. And the thing that I saw was that, you know, when I first came to Robinhood, one of the first things that I did was I built a policy wing inside the organization in the first time of the history of the organization. And there was pushback. People said, well, listen, we don't do politics. You know, we do philanthropy. And my point was this: why do you think that we have these challenges? We have policies that continue to put people and keep people in poverty.
You're literally there because there's gaps, right? If there were no gaps, if governments were taking care of people, you'd be doing something else with your life, not doing that.
We have these organizations that are doing this work because essentially we're assisting to clean up the debris that comes from broken systems. And so, for example, you know, when one of the first things that we initiated was if you look at all the social service work that takes place in all of our communities, right? Most of that is actually being done by nonprofit organizations. Most of that's being done by social service organizations. The entire social service backbone is really nonprofits. Government's not doing the work. Government's just funding it, right? And so here's the thing, though. On average, government will pay these organizations that are doing the work on average 274 days late, and they're not paying them for fairness on the dollar. They're paying them on average 74 cents to the dollar. And by the way, that's for work that's already been completed. And so one of the things we pushed on was actually getting adjustments made so that government actually had to pay people on time and for fair pay and fair wages for the work they were doing, because you literally had social service organizations and nonprofit organizations who were taking out lines of credit because they had government receivables. It's this type of thing that we know we can have a government that actually functions better, because I believe deeply in this. I literally had a sign set on my desk that said, the people who are closest to the challenge are the ones who are closest to the solutions. They're just hardly ever at the table. And so that's how we knew that this wasn't about, you know, that government can solve all challenges or problems. In fact, we've seen what happens when people take on that philosophy. But what it is that the government can be an important conduit and be an important partner in being able to address these larger issues that society is dealing with.
Then why'd you do this? What about government being broken led you to say, I'm going to run for governor, not mayor, not senator? You know, there's a lot of things you could have done and could have stayed up in Robin Hood, could have gone to the private sector, made a fortune. You could have done all those things. Why here and now for this that specifically spoke to you, like that you were going to dedicate your life to doing this for a couple of years, maybe more?
Well, I think it's twofold, right? I think the first thing is when you think about this moment that the state of Maryland has, a brand new balance sheet. Let's be clear. We're looking at upwards of a $6+ billion structural surplus that the state of Maryland has. We have billions of dollars that are coming in from the federal government, and much of it, and you have about 1.9 can be earmarked towards education alone. You have about $7+ billion that's going to be earmarked towards transportation and infrastructure. And you also have about $3.7 billion that's completely discretionary, right? So we have a unique opportunity for our state to rethink its priorities, to rethink the pace in which we move, and how we actually build these bonds and these mechanisms to deal with the issues of transportation deserts and food deserts and opportunity deserts and our education system in a real and a unique way. I think the second piece of that answer, though, is this is my home. You know, I'm a third generation Marylander. This is where I was born. This is where I came of age. This is where I fell in love. This is where my wife and I are raising our children. And so if you have a chance to lead in a place that means everything to me, then why wouldn't I take a look at that? And why wouldn't I look at an opportunity to be able to create a destiny and, frankly, to create an opportunity that as we were coming up, we didn't have those same type of platforms and pathways. Imagine what our children could be if we actually invested in them. And this is the reason that I decided to get in this race.
Wes Morris here. He is our guest. He's a Democratic candidate for governor. We had Aruna Miller, his running mate, on at Fadley's. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Wise Markets. Go ahead, Don. I know you had stuff for Wes, and you've been active in assisting Wes in various ways, and I guess I can speak to that a little bit, but you've heard all of this from Wes before. For our audience, a lot of this is...
Well, Wes, and again, as folks know, we're going to have all the candidates on. I mean, we're going to try to educate the electorate. But Wes and I have been friends for well over a decade, and we just think alike, and our vision for what Maryland can be is very, very similar. But Wes, every time I think I've seen every silly thing that could possibly come up during political campaigns, I always am wrong, and I see another silly thing that I thought, well, now that's a new one. Who would have thought? And this latest little dust up is this silliness about whether or not Wes Moore is truly a Baltimorean. And I kept thinking, I'm going to preface it with this, and then I'm going to have it because I have the book. I've read the book, and I know in the book you say I was born in Tacoma Park. I know in the book you say my mom sent me to live with my grandmother in Brooklyn, and I went to military school. So it's all in the book. So I'm not sure what the silliness is all about. But I start with the big picture. And Nestor, you and I have talked about this a lot. Nestor travels a lot. I travel a lot. I was out with folks last night, Wes, for dinner. We talked about the silliness of this issue. And they said to me, I'm just curious, Don. When you and Linda, wherever you are, if you run into somebody, if you're on a trip to Europe or you're somewhere in the Midwest or in Florida, and they say to you, where are you from? Do you tell them you're from Catonsville? I said, I've never told anybody. I've never lived anywhere but Catonsville in my life. I've never told anyone anything other than I'm from Baltimore. I'm thinking of Baltimore as this region, and we're all connected to Baltimore spiritually. I've never said I'm from Catonsville. I don't think Nestor, if he went somewhere and said I'm from Towson, he'd say I'm from Baltimore. So my question to you is—
I'd say I'm from Dundalk because that sort of narrows it down. But
talk about the silliness of this issue about whether or not Wes Moore and his family are Baltimoreans.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's a desperate attack. And I think it's a desperate attack because I think most people see it as that, because people see the way this campaign is resonating with voters all across the state of Maryland. And you're right, Don. I mean, the facts of my life were clear. On page 7 of the book, I talk about where I was born. On page 37, I talk about how after tragedy, my mom moved us up to go live with my grandparents in the Bronx. When I was almost 4 years old, when I watched my father die in front of me. And it was because he did not get the healthcare that he needed. And our family struggled. And my mom needed refuge. And she called up the people who she thought could provide it to her, which were her parents. And my grandfather was a minister up in the Bronx. My grandmother was a school teacher for 27 years. And their house was barely big enough for them, but they figured out a way to make it big enough for all of us when my mom called. And we moved up there. And I lived up there until I was about 14 years old. And that was when my mom got her first job that gave her benefits after my dad died. It was the first job that allowed her to work one job instead of multiple jobs. That job was at the Annie E. Casey Foundation in Baltimore. And when we moved,
Annie E. Casey Foundation? What is that?
Yeah, so the Annie E. Casey Foundation is actually one of the nation's largest philanthropies and foundations that's exclusively focused on supporting children who are living in poverty. And so they're based in Baltimore. Actually, was founded by the names after the mother of the founder of UPS.
Well, your mother was doing the Lord's work coming to Baltimore, huh?
You're 14, Wes, when you moved back.
Yeah. And so my mom moved back. She actually moved into Anne Arundel County. But as my mom said, I could not keep him out of Baltimore. And there's a reason why. I mean, this was the first place that I felt welcomed. I fell in love with Baltimore. I fell in love with its people, its essence. And I felt like it was the first place in my life that actually accepted me, flaws and all. And so I became a Baltimorean, which I have now been 25 years later. Where we're raising our children here, where I built my career here, where I focused resources. When I started a business that was supporting students, first generation students making it to and through college, we worked. It wasn't just based in Baltimore. We were working with Baltimore City students. When I went to Robinhood to become the CEO, Robinhood had never made investments in the state of Maryland. And the very first place that it made investments in outside in Maryland was in Baltimore. That was when I became the CEO, and we have targeted millions of dollars of investments here in Baltimore. When the pandemic hit, I got together with my friends, and you all know them. I've been on the show, Fagan Harris from Baltimore Core, which I proudly co-founded. Also, Sarah Heminger and Ryan Heminger from Thread. And we got together and we created a platform called Food with a Focus, where in addition to personal family resources, we went and raised over $500,000 to help people who are food insecure in Baltimore. This is my home. I'm a Baltimorean, and nobody has the right to take that away from me.
On the road, being from Baltimore, and I learned this last year when I did the crab cake tour, and you know, I went out and made the left at the Confederate flag and the right at the Trump flag, and I'm out in Western Maryland, I'm out on the Eastern Shore. Hostility exists, as you go down this pathway to try to say fixing Baltimore is a good idea. I heard a lot of Let It Burn, out in the hinterlands here. There's two Marylands. I mean, trying to bring it all together. I drove from Oakland to Ocean City and back and forth. I'm doing it again this year. You're doing it all year long as well. Trying to make people who maybe haven't visited Baltimore in a long time understand the heartbeat, the significance, because all they see on Fox 45 is someone died last night. There was another murder and there's a gun and there's crime. And that's the message that comes out of Baltimore to many folks who only get one message.
Yeah. Well, and also I think this is where leadership matters, right? It's important that we have a chief of executive who every time he says the word Baltimore, it doesn't come with disdain. When I go around the state and we talk about, and I plan on being the governor for all 24, people look at our pace and they're like, you guys are everywhere. And I'm like, get used to it, because that's how I plan on governing, right? We're going to be everywhere, and we are going to be and I will be the governor for every single jurisdiction in this state. But here's what I also know. You cannot have a thriving Maryland if you do not have a growing Baltimore. And I don't say that because I'm a homer. I don't say that because I'm a Baltimorean. I say that because I'm pretty good at math. This is the state's largest city. It is an economic engine that the state relies on. You have some of the greatest anchor institutions in the state of Maryland that are here in Baltimore. So we need to make sure that the Baltimore region, the entire Baltimore region, is thriving, that it is growing, that it is invested in. And that's not just going to benefit Baltimore. That's going to benefit the entire state. I mean, think about it. Look at the rest of the country. You know, when you're looking at what's happened in Detroit over the past 12 years, Detroit is having a bit of a renaissance, right? Who has been the core beneficiary of what's happened in Detroit? The answer is Michigan. When you're looking at Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh is on fire right now. Pittsburgh's population is jumping. You've watched how Google has essentially moved its entire autonomous vehicle fleet to Pittsburgh because they are leveraging Carnegie Mellon and they're leveraging Pitt. Who has been the core beneficiary of Pittsburgh's GDP growth? The answer is Pennsylvania. And so we have to make sure that when one part of the state is thriving, that means the entire state thrives. But you need to have leadership and you need to have a chief executive who doesn't just understand that, but a governor that can articulate it.
Pittsburgh still needs a quarterback, by the way, but nonetheless.
Yeah. Wes, so many issues, so little time. We're going to have you back on, obviously, to expand on many. But you and I have talked a number of times. Nestor hears it all the time. You go all over the state. There's one issue that rises above all others in every discussion, and that is the issue of crime. And folks will say, how does someone who's governor in Annapolis have any impact on crime in Baltimore City to make the city more livable? So let's start with crime. Tell us about a Wes Moore administration and what he does to help address this issue.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is one of the issues that I am so eager to lean in on from Annapolis, because we have not had the lean in from Annapolis. And you're absolutely right, Don. I mean, I'm not just hearing this in Baltimore. We are hearing this around the state. The entire state is wrestling with this issue of crime and violence and mental health. And so I believe deeply. And again, I'm a military veteran. I'm a former member of the 82nd Airborne Division, where I led paratroopers in combat. And there's something that I know, is that there is no greater responsibility for a chief executive than ensuring the public's safety, period. It's their number one job. And rising crime, since this is a statewide problem, it is going to require a statewide focus. And so there's a few things that the state can uniquely do that is going to benefit individual communities like Baltimore. First, we need to make sure that the state is taking leadership on the idea of swiftly and aggressively addressing gun violence. And that also includes things like fixing a broken parole and probation system. A third of all people who are involved in violent crimes right now are in violation of parole and probation. So, i.e., we know who these individuals are, and they're still coming back and committing these same type of violent crimes. But you know what? The mayor is not responsible for parole and probation. Neither is the city council, neither is anyone else. That's the state. DPP is a statewide function. And right now it is underfunded, it is under-resourced, and just like many other platforms within our state, it's understaffed. Well, you cannot address the issue of parole and probation and fixing that system unless you're actually willing to put a priority in terms of fixing it. We have to invest in violence intervention programs and violence interruption programs. We have some tremendous ones that have been proven to work, things like Safe Streets, We Are Us, CURE, organizations that are in communities, because one thing you're seeing about so much of the violence that we're seeing, it's retaliatory, right? It's, I got Nestor. Now Nestor's people are going to come get three of my people, right? It's a very retaliatory violence that we're seeing. We have these violence interruption programs that are doing really good work that are oftentimes underfunded. And you look at a program like We Are Us that receives no state funding. These are organizations that are closest to the ground, so they're also closest to the solution, but we do not have that measure of partnership. We have to address issues like mental health. And the fact is that 41% of all 911 calls actually have issues of mental health that are involved in it. And so you're looking at how local jurisdictions, like actually Anne Arundel County, it has a model program for these crisis intervention teams, these CITs, that actually are trying to decipher who are the people that should and could be responding to different 911 calls. So you're actually being able to put greater resources on the issues of real violent crimes for law enforcement officers. You could take CID, the criminal investigation detectives. One of the biggest challenges we have in Baltimore right now is 41%, the closure rate in the city of Baltimore is 41%. for homicides. That means if I commit a homicide in Baltimore City, I've got a better chance of getting away with it than I do of actually being caught and captured and convicted for it. You could actually take state resources and put them on loan to BPD to increase the closure rate and decrease the workload. Because right now we have homicide detectives that are working 5 and 6 and 7 cases. You're not going to be able to close cases as long as you have that workload for individual homicide detectives. So the point is that there is a lot that we could do in partnership if we actually had that partnership between the state and the local jurisdictions. And that has got to be the priority for the next chief executive.
Wes Moore is our guest. Wes, I know our time's short. I'm going to let you get out of here. Don, if you got a parting shot, have at it. Our window's closed. But I'm doing the Crab Cake Tour. I'm going to be out all in May and June leading up to July. Now that they've moved the election back, I'd love to sit down and talk to you at length about a whole bunch of stuff around the state and issues that I've seen in regard to J1s and H2Bs and getting crabs out of the water and things that I've seen. But the one thing I will say to you, I'll leave you with this because I had never been to Deep Creek Lake. I had never been to Antietam. Still haven't been to Rock Hall, by the way, but I made it to Chestertown and St. Mary's. And what a beautiful state. And this time of year is the budget. I hope you're not sneezing too much with the allergies, but get out, drive the state, and enjoy this part of the campaigning. And we definitely wish you a lot of luck and welcome you back on to continue to talk about all these issues. It's so important to all of us, man.
I got to tell you, Nestor, having a chance to go around, I mean, I'm a Cocoa's loyalist. Right. I love Cocos. However, going around this state, Timbuktu's, the Narrows, there are a lot of places.
Haven't done Timbuktu yet. All right. So I'm going to do. I'm going to give you two places. All right. So write these down. Brian, if you're listening, you ready? You're going to go to the end of the earth now. You're going to be campaigning more to oysters and fish than you are to people, but you want to go all the way down to Hooper's Island. There's a place called Old Salties. Okay. So it's the most remote crab cake. That's not Crisfield. Now you can go over to Crisfield and she'll make you a cake and a crab cake over there in Tylerton. You want to get a crab cake in Tylerton. I mean, again, you're going to be campaigning the ducks. But then the other place is you go to the Trump flag and you make the left at the Confederate flag. And underneath of it, there's a place called Suicide Bridge. It's an awful name, but a beautiful place. There's a restaurant there called Suicide Bridge Restaurant, and you want to get a crab. You're going to want to get two crab cakes there. Okay.
Love it.
Hey, I do have one final thought, Nestor, as we're talking crab cakes. Wes, you recently got the most coveted of all endorsements in this state. And folks who follow politics, when they woke up and saw that Wes Moore got 85% of the vote among MSEA members,
No one knows what MSEA is, by the way. Other teachers. Go ahead. Sorry.
Maryland State Education Association, our good friend Cheryl Post. I worked hard for my buddy Kevin Kamenetz, and we couldn't pull that off. 85%. What did that endorsement mean to the Moore Miller team?
I tell you what it meant to the Moore Miller team, but I'll also tell you what it meant to me personally. I come from a long line of my whole family is preachers and teachers. And I think about the amount of educators. I've got educators in my family going from Cecil County to Prince George's County. And I remember having a conversation with one of my aunts who was a 37-year educator, much of it in Prince George's County. And this was earlier in the year. And one of my middle names is Omari. So she calls me Omari. She's like, Omari, she said, this is my last year. And she told me this has been the toughest year of my entire 37 being an educator. And I think about her often, because when we put together our plan and worked with educators to put together our plan for what we want to do, not just for educators, but with educators over this next decade, how we are going to, I was proud to work on the blueprint. I was proud to testify on behalf of it. I'm going to be proud to fully fund it. And I'm excited to work in partnership to fully implement it. But this meant the world to me, both because, you know, first, MSEA, we're talking about the largest union in this state. It's 76,000 members. And MSEA, you know, hasn't gotten the primary wrong in 35 years. Who MSEA generally goes on to win the nomination and oftentimes goes on to win the election as well.
I would think teachers vote, too. Don, you can speak to that. But on a percentage basis, teachers, I don't know, is it 80, 90? I mean, what huge percentage of teachers vote, right?
Teachers vote, and when you're standing at the polls and you're giving out ballots, people typically don't like they'll go, no, I already know, no. But when they see the Apple, which is the MSEA, they go, hey, give me the Apple ballot, because people care about education, right, Wes?
They do. And they should. Everything that we are talking about, everything, whether you're talking about public safety, whether you're talking about transportation or housing, whether you're talking about job opportunities and jobs of now and jobs of future, it all fundamentally comes back to education. And I tell you, I think there were two things that saved me, right? One, it was I had a mother who just would not quit. And the second thing was I had an education that taught me that the world was bigger than what was just directly in front of me. And so we are going to make sure we are working in partnership with our educators and paraeducators and ESPs. We are going to focus on having Maryland be the education capital of this country. Because when we do, Maryland will win every single day.
Well, listen, we sat with Larry Hogan 6 months ago, who campaigned against Kerwin, the red line, all of these issues that you're running on. This is a chance for people to fix that if they were unhappy with it, a chance for people to go in another direction than what we've seen the last 8 years here. I'm not here to campaign for you or for the ticket or any of that, but there are dramatic differences in what you're pushing than what we've accepted here the last 8 years.
And if folks want more information, Wes, pretty easy, right? Wesmoore.com?
That's it. Wesmoore.com. Reach out to us on social. But we are excited because the momentum that we have with this campaign, it is real. And people are ready and they are excited. And we are just looking forward to it. And we are thankful to everybody for all the momentum that we continue to see.
All right, man. Well, a crab cake, maybe at the Black Swan, maybe, I don't know. We'll find a place. It won't be Coco's right now because we did Coco's recently. And that's the mayor's right. Got a lock on that. Until I have to call you governor instead of Wes, he's still the highest ranking official with the Coco's thing. Although they all sort of line up for Marcella. It's crazy. Everybody loves the Coco's crab cake. Wes, appreciate you. Good luck. All right.
Appreciate both y'all with the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody.
And thanks for joining us.
Wes, just so you know, because I know one of your competitors loves to talk about this, I'm doing 31 breweries in August, too. So if you are the Democratic candidate, there may be a beverage involved in this by the time we get to August. I'm not going to get there by July 19th, although I will have a few beers between now and then. But I'm saving Maryland's breweries to go along with Maryland's crab cakes. It makes sense, right?
I might just have to join you on that one, too, Wes.
Well, you're going to have to be the Democratic candidate. I'll have to deal with your handlers to meet you somewhere on the Eastern Shore. It's good to have you aboard, man. Appreciate it, always.
Always good to see you. Always good to see you.
Westmore, we tried to make Blackwater work last year, and it was closed on Tuesday. Get Blackwater open 7 days a week when you're governor. Don Mohler, former Baltimore County executive, and Westmore for governor. Always great to spend time with Wes. We spent some time with Aruna Miller, his running mate. You can check that out at Baltimore Positive from Fadley's a couple of weeks ago. On behalf of all of our sponsors on our Wise Conversations, as well as the Maryland Crab Cake Tour that we're bringing back out on the road, courtesy of the Maryland Lottery, our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.